I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back.
Reminding you on the way here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. On our way to join this conversation, we'll begin with a very short conversation here with Brian Sears. Brian Sears is the government reporter for the Daily Record and its Eye on Annapolis blog. And Brian, good to have you with us.
Good morning, Mark.
So, Brian, let's just start very quickly here. I mean, it's interesting that during our Annapolis summit, it became clear the governor made national news, making clear that he wasn't very comfortable with marijuana. The speaker was saying he can't get there right now, but the president was saying of the Senate, yes. And then later on, it comes tumbling out. He said he would support legalization of marijuana. That it came tumbling out that Maggie McIntosh, head of one of the most powerful committees in the House, says yes. And so this begins. It may not pass this year. Talk a bit about the politics of why it won't pass this year and what you think is happening.
Well, I think we're not there yet. We're certainly going to begin this conversation this year. As you know, and your listeners probably know, Senator Jamie Raskin of Montgomery County and Delegate Kurt Anderson of Baltimore City are both going to have companion bills that are going to call for the legalization of recreational use of marijuana, much in the same way that Colorado currently does. But there is a sense right now among a lot of members of the General Assembly that they want to wait and see how this plays out in Colorado and in Washington before they make Maryland a test case.
But it'll be a hot debate, and it's going to get through. I mean, you think we'll get on the floor? There'll be a floor vote?
You know, I don't think that there will be a floor vote. I think that there will be a discussion. You'll see these bills get hearings in the Senate and the House. I think it's unlikely that there will be a committee vote. My guess is that this is going to be a tough sell, especially in Joe Valerio's committee over in the House Judiciary Committee. But there will be a discussion. And look, I mean, we had a conversation with Senate President Mike Miller. I've got some video up on my Eye on Annapolis blog where, you know, Miller talks frankly about the legalization of marijuana. And he says essentially that, you know, he believes it's going to happen. He believes it's going to happen in his lifetime. He does not believe it's going to happen during his tenure as Senate president. But, you know, he's convinced that it's going to happen. But this year's probably not going to be the year. And he's a pragmatist and points out the fact that, you know, you've got the governor and the House Speaker who are not in favor of this. And those are major roadblocks to getting anything done in Annapolis.
Well, I want to thank you once again, Brian, for joining us. It's a very quick segment, but you always have your pulse on what's happening, and we look forward to let's work on some weekly updates with you and longer segments.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Mark.
Thank you, Brian. Brian's government reporter for the Daily Record and its Eye on Annapolis blog. We're here now with Rachel Young, who is legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, Sarah Love, public policy director of ACLU Maryland, and retired police major Neil Franklin, executive director of law enforcement against prohibition, a 33-year police veteran. Good to have the three of you with us.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Mark.
And you can join us here at 410-319-8888 with your thoughts, or write to us at steinershow@gmail.com or tweet us at Mark Steiner. So, and then in about 20 minutes or so, we're going to have a debate on this with people for and against. But these are three people who have been fighting for a change in our marijuana laws. And so, Sarah Love, let me start with you, and then we'll go around this room very quickly. I was just rereading parts of the report that the ACLU put out about marijuana and arrests, and talk about the ACLU's end of this and the motivation for pushing a reform of these laws.
Sure. As you mentioned, the ACLU of Maryland did a report in October, and this report was based on a report that our national office did. And our national office's report showed that despite comparable rates of use among whites and blacks, blacks are overwhelmingly arrested for marijuana possession across the United States. Our report built on that and showed that same racial disparity in every county in the state of Maryland. So the ACLU of Maryland comes at this as a part of our racial justice work, trying to stop the, you know, mass criminalization of communities of color. And a lot of it is through the war on marijuana, through arresting young black men for marijuana possession.
And Rachel, this is interesting for you as part of the Marijuana Policy Project. We got to a point now where we are actually debating legalization. I think this has come much more quickly than we thought.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that views are evolving so quickly. Just this past weekend, we heard from the president of the United States that he's seeing the same racial injustice problems that Sarah just highlighted that's happening here in Maryland. Since Colorado and Washington legalized marijuana just a year ago, public opinion has really shifted towards seeing that prohibition of marijuana is not working and that we need to be seeking out alternate policies.
And Neil, again, I mean, you've been debating this for a long time on all corners of all kinds of people.
Yeah, that's what we do at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We debate, we educate people.
So talk about where you think we are, and I'd like all of you to comment about what you think these stepping stones are we're about to enter, because I think the political wisdom is that it's not going to pass this year, but this is a huge step in the direction for those who want to see legalization of marijuana.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the thing is the conversation had to become serious at some point here in Maryland. It's become serious in many other states around the country and even outside of the country in places like Uruguay and all down through Central America. So we had to begin this conversation here in Maryland. We need this conversation here in Maryland. We need the action of what's going on in Annapolis right now. We need the media involved to educate the listeners and the public and the viewers out there. And, you know, we are doing the work with the coalition, the Marijuana Policy Coalition. We're doing that work in Annapolis, educating our policymakers regarding this issue. And I know that many people want to wait. Okay, you want to play the so-called safe wait-and-see game. But prohibition has never worked. You know, this policy was dead on arrival decades ago. And, you know, every day, every minute, every hour that we wait, that's more people that are arrested and saddled with arrest records. And we know what that does to the future of regarding for their education and employment. You know, we have more crime in our streets. We have more money, millions if not billions, going into the hands of the cartel and other criminal gangs and organized crime. Every day, every hour is critical and is important. You know, I just want to point out real quick and the reason why this is so important. You know, Fox did a cover story last night on mass incarceration and another documentary that's being made regarding mass incarceration. So here we are again. And the cover story was about a gentleman, I think his name was Rob, and he had been arrested a while back for dealing drugs. He got out of prison, got his life together, had a great family, started a construction business, and was on the right track. I mean, things were working for him, but then the housing bubble hit, okay, and jobs went away. His company went under, and his savings was depleted. And you know what? At the end of the day, it was how do I put food on my table?
Right.
Where are my kids going to sleep? And he had to go back to the one thing that he knew could make money for him, and that was unfortunately back selling drugs. He's now doing an 18-month sentence
for selling marijuana,
and his family is in dire straits again.
So tell me, Sarah, what do you think is at stake here?
What do I think is at stake here?
Yeah,
I think people's liberty, people's lives. You know, our communities have been torn apart by this mass criminalization of communities of color. So as Neil said, people are losing jobs. They are not able to get jobs because they have arrest records on them. We are continuing this. You know, there was a piece in the Rolling Stone, Tale of Two Drug, I don't remember exactly the title, but basically, if you're white, you don't have to worry. If you're black, you do have to worry because you will be arrested for marijuana possession. So what's at stake is it's a huge amount in our society in terms of racial aspects, in terms of economic aspects, in terms of interactions between law enforcement and individuals, and the list just goes on.
I mean, when you look at the stats, and I'm going to turn back here to Rachel here in a minute, talk about how she sees the legislature, what's actually going on, what she thinks the inside battles are going on in Annapolis right now. When you look at the stats, the racial disparities in marijuana possession arrests, Baltimore City is 1,600 almost to 280 in round numbers. Cecil County, where there aren't that many black people living, 1,197 of the arrests to 309 for white kids being arrested, for white people being arrested in Cecil County. Same thing in Queen Anne's County. Same thing in Talbot, Caroline. I mean, it just boggles the mind when you look at this and just see the unevenness. We had a young man on the show yesterday who is doing a documentary with on this and interviewed a man who is African-American, who has been arrested, who knows how to lay fiber optic cable and can't get a job because of a marijuana arrest that he spent 18 months in jail for. So these are the kind of things that are just – we have to deal with these realities, I think. And, Rachel, how do you see the reality coming up in Annapolis? What's your legislative sense telling you?
Well, we know that based on several polls that have been conducted in the past couple months, we know that the people of Maryland are supportive of regulating marijuana like alcohol. Marijuana, which is a substance we know is objectively less harmful than alcohol. It's less toxic, less addictive, less harmful for the individual user, and as Neil and Sarah have pointed out, less harmful for the community overall. We know people are realizing this. People are understanding that young people of color especially are going to jail because of the use of a substance that is safer overall for people and the community. And we know that legislators in both the House and Senate are supportive of these changes, of trying to see Maryland come out of marijuana prohibition. Everyone is just hesitant because it's a political year. They're trying to play it safe.
Right.
And what really needs to happen is for constituents to reach out to the legislators and tell them, this is how I was affected by not marijuana, the substance, but the criminalization of marijuana. You know, the continued presence of marijuana in the criminal market and the laws against it are what have affected me and my family. We need constituents to be brave enough to talk to legislators. Or else lawmakers won't act without them.
We have a tweet in here from Higgins, and the tweet is, considering you could write a musical with all the anti-pot sound bites, I'm going to guess no about whether or not marijuana could be legalized this session. Probably not, but...
Well, you know, let's get right to the point. What we're dealing with here is fear. Most people you talk to by far know that the drug war has failed. They know that marijuana prohibition has failed. What we're dealing with is fear. Oh, what about the kids? Okay, this so-called gateway theory of marijuana, you know, being their gateway, and now even people like Mike Gimbel, who is a very well-known advocate for treatment here in the state of Maryland, he doesn't believe in that gateway theory either because there's no proof. There is absolutely no proof. What the issue here is where do we devote our resources? And Mike's also very much concerned about this, obviously. Our resources should be going to education and treatment, okay? We shouldn't be investing in criminalization, as we're talking about today, law enforcement, prisons, courtrooms, treatment and education. We need to do the same thing we've done with tobacco products, okay? Over the past few decades, we've been very successful in reducing that rate to around 40%, and we're not sending anyone to prison, okay? We're not having shootouts in our streets. We're focusing on education and treatment as it relates to tobacco products and nicotine. That's how we beat this. So, you know, as we move forward, we can take that well over $100 million that we're spending on arresting people here in the state of Maryland for marijuana. We can take a good portion of that and invest it in treatment and education. Okay, the taxes that would be generated, we could do the same thing, treatment and education. That's how you're going to beat your drug use and abuse problem.
And one thing I want to get to before we break here in about 4 or 5 minutes, and by the way, Ernest and Clarence, Bruce, the people who are calling in, we're going to get to your calls. We're staying with this for the entire hour. We're just setting up now and try to get your call before break if we can. But this is really, I don't know who wants to hit this one, Sarah or Rachel, but this is interesting. This is a coalition being built. NAACP, League of Women Voters, other organizations. This is a fairly broad coalition that is being built around to push legalization of marijuana. Right, Rachel?
That's right. A coalition started being built last year right after the passage of the Washington and Colorado votes to legalize. And it's only been expanding ever since. We recently added Casa de Maryland, another group that's focused on minority issues. As well as, I believe, Sarah, remind me of our latest coalition.
Demand Progress.
What did you say, Sarah?
Demand Progress.
And they are who?
demand progress.
I said they are who? What group is that?
I apologize.
That's all right.
They're an organization that works for progressive policies across the state of Maryland.
So it's interesting to see this kind of coming together here, given everything that we're facing. But I think that there's a couple double edged sword here. One has to do with people's right to do what they want that doesn't harm that on their own, and whether it's alcohol, drinking a beer, having a martini, or smoking a joint, or eating a brownie, however you like to do it. and the other part is the stuff that ACLU's been working on, which is the unevenness of incarceration, the idea that people are spending years in jail for marijuana possession. That's the part, I think, that is also grabbing a lot of people, Sarah.
It is. And it goes beyond that, Mark, back to what we were talking about before. It's not just the incarceration, because here in Maryland, we don't actually incarcerate a huge number of people for low-level marijuana possession, but it's those arrests. Arrests that have
records.
That devastating effect, yes. And the great thing about this coalition is that it is, as you noted, it is very, very broad. We have Equality in Maryland, which is the leading gay, lesbian, transgender rights group in Maryland. We have the League of Women Voters. We have a number of different organizations, because everybody realizes, as Neil mentioned, that the prohibition hasn't worked and it's affected different people in different ways. You know, gays and lesbians have been targeted and attacked, and, you know, they have had problems with relation to marijuana and marijuana arrests as well. So, you know, everybody is beginning to see, and the more and more people we talk to and more groups we reach out to, people are coming on board and saying, yes, we need to end marijuana prohibition in Maryland.
Well, we're going to take this segment just across the 30-minute mark here in the show before we enter the debate with our legislators and Neil Franklin staying in that debate. But this is an email that just came in, and then we'll go to the phones. As a neuroscientist who spent many years researching the cause of psychosis, I can tell you that there is an overwhelming body of scientific literature showing an association between marijuana use and schizophrenia. At least some of the data provides evidence for a cause and effect relationship in a controlled laboratory setting, putting THC, the active ingredient in marijuana, elicits psychotic symptoms in users. How many in the public know this? And shouldn't they know before voting to legalize this drug? Too many think today's pot is more benign than 60s and 70s, but it's much more potent. The underprivileged communities that Obama and some of your panelists are concerned about are not immune to the psychosis-inducing effect of the drug. And for those in the inner city who become schizophrenic because of marijuana use, the end result is homelessness.
Well, I don't. For anyone who has a substance abuse problem, when you dig deeper, it's not the substance that is the real problem. There's a reason for them using any substance, whether it's marijuana, alcohol, or some of the others that are out there. But even if what he is saying is true, wouldn't it be more of a reason to take a substance that is being controlled by criminals? You talk about the rise in THC over the past few decades. Yeah, that's because there's a criminal marketplace managing it, and we have no regulations or standards to put in place. You can't control that. The question is, who should be controlling such a substance? You know, even if what he's saying is true, and I know it's not, but even if it was, do you want organized crime controlling it, or should we take control of it, put it in the hands of responsible business owners who value a license that's hanging on the wall, you know, where the studies can be done, where the research could now be done if it were legalized, to, you know, for health purposes and for other, you know, reasons.
We're going to take a quick break, come back with our guests, and go right to the phones. On the way out, a tweet, respond to our tweet, will marijuana be legalized in Maryland in this legislative session? Should it? Tweet your thoughts. Well, Melissa tweeted in, no, it won't, but yes, it should be. We'll be right back. Stay with us, and we'll go right to the phones and conclude the session with our guests here before we enter the debate. Stay with us. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. And we are here with our guests, and we're taking this segment here for the next few minutes before we enter our debate with our legislative folks. Let me reintroduce our guests here. You know who's on the phone with us, Rachel Jung, who is legislative analyst for Maryland Marijuana Policy Project, Sarah Love, Public Policy Director for ACLU of Maryland, Neil Franklin, retired police major who's head of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, 410-319-8888. Bruce, you're on the air.
Yeah, Mark. So, you know, I got to keep my cool about this. I was going to start the comments a certain way, but now I've changed it because, like everything, it becomes a racial issue. Absolutely ridiculous. First off, I was going to say maybe marijuana should be decriminalized. It should be legalized. So let me tell you, you know why more blacks are arrested than whites?
You tell me.
Well, I'm going to tell you why. I'm 60 as of a week ago, and when I was in my 20s, I sold small quantities of marijuana. Small, nothing bigger than a half pound, nickel and dime bags, small stuff, and it was for pocket money and for stash. But because the people that I knew and the most of the people that I associated with, and I associated with blacks too, but most of the white people, I'm going to tell you, you're not going to like this. We were pragmatic. We were practical. We were smart. I didn't deal with people I didn't know. I didn't see.
Okay, Bruce, thanks for the call. No. We have a lot of calls. I'm just going to say I think that what you're saying is, with all due respect, just the drug dealers on any race can be smart or pragmatic or non-pragmatic. That's not the reason that more black folks are getting arrested for marijuana and any other drug use. There are a lot of variable factors. Part of it is the institutional racism, our police department and justice system that goes after black people for crimes that all our peoples commit, but they become the ones who are the first arrested.
I just want to tell, hey, Bruce, there's a book by Joseph Cullum that you need to read. It's called The Black Dragon. It's about the New Jersey Turnpike and the New Jersey State Police and racial profiling back in the 80s. And the New Jersey State Police went around to 40-something other states and taught law enforcement on how to do drug enforcement and interdiction. Read that book and then come back to the show.
410-319-8888. Another quick call. Ernest, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning to you and your guests. They have this Dr. Curtis Hart, who's a psychologist and a psychiatrist that I heard on these airways on the Amy Goodman show and all over the television dial.
He's a neurologist. He's a neurologist, African American neurologist.
Right.
Right.
He did studies on this, on animals and humans, in-house study, and he found out that all the information that was given on this, on drugs in particular, all drugs, are false.
Talk about Carl Hart?
Yeah, Carl Hart.
Columbia University. Right. His book is High Price.
Huh?
His book is High Price.
Yeah. I heard him several times, and he's been able to argue his position against anybody that he's come up against. They haven't been able to refute him on his study, and it's published in the AMA.
Right.
Now, but this is the thing, Mark. All these people calling for not to legalize drugs. I bet you if you would have drug tests, every politician that's been elected to office and that is office, you'll find out a number of them have been using drugs. And if you put them on a box, a lie detector box, and ask them if they ever used drugs, a number of them have also used drugs in their lifetime. But never has been arrested.
All right, Ernest, appreciate it. We have to really move ahead here, but I appreciate the call and your comments. And I think that one of the things you saw President Obama say was that he thought that we should stop putting people in jail for marijuana because we've all done it, he said. And so putting people in jail for things we've done in our youth makes no sense. So I think that, you know, there's a lot there. And let me get a closing thought here from Sarah and Rachel before we move on to the debate. And we'll come back to Clarence and Doug, our next two callers, during the debate. Sarah, want to leave us with a thought?
Well, first, Mark, thanks so much for having us on. I think it's really important to continue to have this conversation. As some of the people have said, we may or may not have a law to tax and regulate marijuana in Maryland this year, but I firmly believe that it is coming because it is the right policy. So I welcome this conversation. Thanks again for having us on.
Thank you, Sarah. Good to talk to you once again. Sarah Love, Public Policy Director for the ACLU of Maryland, and Rachel Young.
Yeah, thank you as well for having me, Mark. As we've spoken about, this is a shifting policy nationally. And for anyone with their eye on national politics, legalization is becoming more and more mainstream and the right way to go as well. So we hope that leaders here in Maryland will do their job and be leaders instead of followers.
Rachel, always great to have you with us as well. Rich Young is the legislative analyst for the Marijuana Policy Project, and good to have you with us, and we'll get you back on the air very soon. Thanks.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Take care.
A little bit too much coffee this morning, maybe. My drug here. Mouth is moving too quickly. We're going to take a 30-second break and come back with our delegates for a debate on what's going to happen in Annapolis. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, the retired Major Neil Franklin, Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, remains with us, a 33-year police veteran who has led multi-jurisdictional anti-narcotics task forces when he was a Maryland State Policeman. Joins us along with our guest coming in now to join us in for this part of our program, the debate on whether or not marijuana will be legalized in the state of Maryland. And joining us are members of the House of Delegates. Delegate Dr. Dan Moorheim is with us, representing Maryland's 11th District in Baltimore County. He's also a physician. The Delegate Kathy Vitalia joins us. She represents Maryland's 33rd District in Anne Arundel County. And Delegate Sam Arora joins us, representing Maryland's 19th District in the House of Delegates and a Democrat from Montgomery County. Good to have all of you with us.
Good to be with you, Mark.
So I'm curious where you all think with what's going on. I guess some people were semi-shocked to see not shocked is the wrong word, but we're taken aback and not expecting to have Maggie McIntosh, chair of one of the most powerful committees, come out in favor of legalization. I'm curious what you all think about. Let's start there, Dan Moorheim, with this idea of legalization and what you think is going to happen in the House.
I never want to make a prediction about what's going to happen in the House, but we did pass a medical marijuana bill last year. Unfortunately, it really hasn't worked. Because we've relied on academic medical centers, and they're not stepping up to the plate. So, and Delegate Vitale and Delegate Arora and I all supported that bill. I will be putting in legislation to make that bill more workable. And so as the only physician in the Maryland General Assembly, my first goal in this war on drugs is to get the sick and the dying off the battlefield. Let's try and get a working medical marijuana bill passed. There can be great public debate on decriminalization and on the legalization and taxation, but I hope everybody continues to come together in a bipartisan manner to recognize the value of medical marijuana in the very appropriate controlled way that we passed legislation last session. I also want to thank Neil Franklin for his terrific work over the years on enlightening the public based on his experience. And my experience as an emergency physician has been that other drugs are vastly more dangerous than marijuana, including alcohol, tobacco, heroin, and cocaine. So in my 30 years of emergency medicine, treating 150,000 people or more and talking to all my colleagues, I've never seen even one patient there solely for marijuana. And in the history of medicine, there have been exactly zero deaths from marijuana overdose, but I've seen plenty of complications from all sorts of other drugs, over-the-counter and prescription, both. But my focus is the medical marijuana bill. I really want to make that work.
And Delegate Vitale, you voted against medical marijuana. Is that correct?
No, I voted in favor of the legislation that was passed last year. I have been convinced over the years that medical marijuana, if properly addressed and obviously properly supervised, Delegate Moorheim and I had a wonderful opportunity to talk last year about the benefits of medical marijuana, and he was able to convince me that in that limited circumstance, it certainly made sense. I am not prepared, nor would I expand my vote to include decriminalizing marijuana. I actually come from a different background. I look at it a little differently, as the doctor and the delegate are
well aware, I've spent the last 3 years in General Assembly trying to get the General Assembly and the committee, the Judiciary Committee, to actually look at what I do think is a worse drug, and that's the synthetic marijuana. It was actually, quite frankly, synthetic marijuana that people were trying to use in a medical circumstance that led me to the discussion with Delegate Morheim about the using of the natural product in the medical circumstances. But, you know, as we talk about the potency and the difficulty and the problems that could occur as a result of increased drug use, well, I certainly agree that alcohol has its own problems. My experience, both as a legislator as well as an attorney, is that the marijuana is always the first step, first stage. Youth are likely to use more than adults, and I don't see that decriminalizing for adults is going to make it any less off limits for the entry drug or the gateway drug for that 13 to 19 age group. Instead, they're going to continue to turn to this synthetic marijuana, which is going to result in a continued increase of people who come visit Dr. Morheim in the ER. So I don't think we should take that next step. I have not been convinced that decriminalizing marijuana in and of itself is somehow or another going to not create additional problems.
The Delegate Aurora, let me bring you in.
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot of ground without maybe talking to the question you'd asked, which is whether it's going to pass this year. I will venture a guess. I will say the legalization does not pass this year. I think you don't have the support for it in the House of Delegates at this point. And it's really untested whether you have the support for full legalization in the state Senate. It's just not happening this year. But I think that that's okay because right now we do see two other states venturing forward into this realm. And it was Justice Louis Brandeis who said states may, as if its citizens choose, serve as a laboratory. And I think we have two laboratories that are going to be working with this experiment now, and hopefully that will provide useful data and experience for Maryland to consider in future years. Because when we talk about full legalization, we're talking about a fairly drastic change to the criminal justice system and to health and addiction and treatment. We just, as you heard from Dan Morheim, we just approved medical marijuana. We have no real experience, very little data from that already, and we do need to more fully understand what the implications of legalization would be. Okay, is it possible we get to decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana this year? Yes, I think that is entirely possible.
So let me bring you back in here, Neil Franklin, and I, in the 15 minutes or so left, we're going to go to the phones as well at 410-319-8888, and Clarence, you're the next caller up. But let's talk about your perspective, what you heard the three delegates say. I mean, I think the common wisdom is that legalization will most likely not pass the House and Senate this year.
Right.
But
we still need to be talking about it. And just two quick points. First, beginning with the gateway theory that Delegate Vitale spoke about. You know, the drug itself, the plant, is not the gateway. Okay, because you could establish an argument that alcohol and tobacco is the true gateway to using any mind-altering substance or things that aren't bad for you as far as drugs go. It is the environment that is the true gateway. And right now we have the worst possible environment for our kids. We have drug dealers who hire kids into the business of selling marijuana within our schools because we, have, as adults, can't go into the schools and sit in classrooms and sell anything. It is the environment of the drug dealers who their goal is to get more people to use drugs. Those people who currently buy and use marijuana, even the adults, we force them to go into an environment managed by crime syndicates and organized crime and gangs. And when they go purchase their marijuana, they're now into a dangerous environment. They're also into an environment where that drug dealer also has other products to push on them and in many cases will give them samples of heroin, cocaine, meth, and other things for free. You know, the second point is I just want to draw your attention to what's happening in Colorado, okay? Look at the videos. Look at the photographs of all the people standing in line. There's a couple of things that you will notice right away. Number one, there are no kids standing in line, okay? Number two, there's no kids behind a counter selling marijuana. And number three, the millions of dollars, $1 million a day roughly, that's going to these store owners and these new employees. Those people pay taxes. But it's also within that first week, $5 million was prevented from going into the hands of criminal organizations and gangs in the state of Colorado. That's $5 million less that they have to buy guns. That's $5 million less that they have to further other criminal enterprises. And that will continue to grow. And I think that's extremely important because decriminalization leaves that illegal business intact.
So let me come back to the delegates here on the program and what you just heard that Neil Franklin was saying, and I want to ask you from different perspectives here. And let me just start, if I might, with Delegate Vitale, and I'll jump over to Delegate Moorheim. What effect does Neil's argument have on what you were saying?
It prompts me to say, "Oh my gosh, you've got to be kidding!"
Why do you say that?
If I take Neil's, with all due respect, Neil, if I take your premise that we don't find kids selling the marijuana in the store, and so therefore, you know, it's not going to be available to the students, I'd suggest the following. I don't see any 13 to 18-year-olds selling alcohol. I don't see in the stores. Yet we both know that there is a huge alcohol situation certainly in our state. I don't see the logic in saying we're going to make something legal for adults and somehow or another, simply in the name of raising revenue, we should be doing something that we're then going to turn around and tell our children, but you can't do this. It didn't work for alcohol. I don't see it working for marijuana.
So would you make alcohol illegal as well?
Let's prohibit alcohol and tobacco then.
You know, I think that what we saw and what we continue to see is that while alcohol itself has its own dependency, and I'm not going to stand here and say that the alcoholism is not a problem because I do believe that it is, but what I do see here is that those that are partaking in alcohol and those that may be suffering from alcoholism aren't turning to another drug. You yourself said that we don't have, you know, we'll have students pushing it in the school, and so by making it legal, that's going to reduce students pushing it in the school. My question to you is, if it's still illegal to students, what is going to prevent somebody from purchasing it, having it, and still selling it in the school? The guy who pulls from his parents' cabinet the Percocet and sells it in school, or takes his own ADHD drugs and sells them at school.
But that could happen whether it was legal or illegal.
We're looking at it completely different.
I am not at this point in any position to suggest that we ought to be decriminalizing something simply because it supports a revenue base.
We're always going to have drug use and abuse problem in this country. We've had it. We have it today, and we always will have it. The problem is, we've added another problem on top of it, which is separate from that, and that is the policies of prohibition. We should be focusing, a laser focus on treatment and education of our young people, and that's why we've been so successful with reducing the use of tobacco products in this country, and we're not sending people to prison. We're not having shootouts in our streets. So that's very important.
We only have a few minutes left here. I mean, like 7 or 8 minutes left, and I want to make sure there are other delegates back in here and try to get to the phones as well. Delegate Moorheim, let me go to you before we go back to Delegate Aurora. I mean, I know that medical marijuana is what you are is the thing you've been talking about for years on this program in the legislature, but the overarching issue of marijuana, does that in dealing with that, does that make it easier to finally get medical marijuana if it's legalized?
Well, I hope we, you know, last year the medical marijuana bill was the cutting edge of the marijuana discussion, and now we're talking about legalization and decriminalization.
Right.
I certainly think there's an argument for decriminalization. There's, you know, people get caught with a couple of marijuana cigarettes when they're 16, 18, 20 years old, and it marks them for life. It bars employment and causes all kinds of other problems. I think the money aspect of the drug trade in general, let's move off marijuana for a moment, is a huge factor. There are literally billions of dollars being laundered all over the world. Much of that does not get reported, but HSBC Bank just got fined $150 million. They were laundering billions of dollars. In fact, in the description, which you can read in places like Rolling Stone and The Guardian, the British newspaper, they were shoving cash through in metal boxes that fit exactly through the teller's window. I mean, the scale of the drug trade throughout the world is staggering, and the money drives it all. And if we can get some of the money out of this through whatever steps, I think we'll do a lot of good.
And there's only one way to do that.
A dealer that, when I worked at healthcare for the homeless clinic, he'd spent 20 years in jail, and I got to ask him, how much was he making? He said $20,000 a week, personally, himself, clearing that tax-free. Look, I'm glad we're finally having some discussions about the broader drug implications of heroin and cocaine, as well as alcohol and tobacco, and apparently the, you know, Americans' desire to alter consciousness. There are lots of ways to do it that don't involve drugs, and those are always recommended. But marijuana definitely has medical benefit, and we ought to at least be sure we take care of those people, whether they have epilepsy or Parkinson's disease, cancer, chemotherapy, and so on. That's my first goal, and I'm glad we're engaging in the discussion here. And we need to hear from the public and all legislators' opinions, and I value their input.
So before we get to the phones, I really got to try to get some callers in here. People are calling in, but I also have a lot of guests. Don't look at Aurora. Just very quickly, when people say they're for decriminalization and not legalization, one of the arguments is that because it's going to be so tough, I mean, I guess you can figure out how to do it, but decriminalization doesn't take the crime out of it, doesn't take the don't take the gangrenes out of it, doesn't take the violence out of it.
Let me first start by saying that my favorite mind-altering experience is hearing Dan Morheim and Kathy Vitale speak, because it always expands my mind. But no, I mean, Mark, you have a point there. It certainly it doesn't take away some of the nefarious elements that I think are good arguments for legalization. But at the same time, it's like toothpaste. Once you take it out of the tube, you can't put it back. You can't legalize it and then
right.
ban it. So what I'm saying is, let's take a look at this data. If we're going to move toward liberalization of our marijuana policies, and by all indications it seems that we are, let's do it in a smart way. Maryland, we tend to govern from a data-driven perspective, an evidence-based perspective. And so when we leap without looking where we're going to land, we might run into some problems there. But I think one thing your show is identifying is we're coming at this issue from two different directions. One is a sort of deontological principled thing. You know, it's the same as alcohol. It's an arbitrary distinction. And the second is a consequentialist view. You know, we're looking at what this has on the effect of the effects on, say, young men, particularly young men of color, ending up in the criminal justice system, and the reentry problems tied to that, and the burdens to our system. These are all important things to keep pushing the conversation forward.
Mark, can I just add two things? One, Dan here again. Maryland is the fourth highest state per capita for marijuana arrests. Number two, that the rate of arrests of minority populations is far higher. And don't take this the wrong way, but the two Super Bowl teams are both from the states that legalized marijuana.
We turn to the Bud Bowl.
Exactly.
Denver,
I'm
Colorado,
natural.
Their teams are in the
I'm
Super Bowl.
The Bud Bowl. That's a different kind of Bud Bowl. I'm sorry. Sorry.
The governors are going to bet, you know?
Let me try to get a quick call in here if we have time for at least a call. Let's go to Clarence. You're on the air. Very quick thought.
Hey, thanks, Mr. Cunningham. I had a longer comment, but I'll just say this. Slowly but surely, you're going to legitimize drug cartels in New Mexico, and that tremendous amount of money that they have is going to flow through a lot of rich people's hands, tobacco companies, politicians, and the rest. And one morning I'm going to wake up like I have 12 liquor stores within a mile of my house. I'll have 12 head shops. Thank you.
Well, you probably got double that, if not triple that, of drug dealers selling it out on your corners in the shadows now. So
another very quick call. Can we have time for one more caller? We do. And let's go to Gary. A quick thought from you, Gary. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I represent a group of Maryland substance abuse prevention advocates. It's called Smart Approaches to Marijuana, and we have the Maryland affiliate of that. And we certainly favor legislation that it doesn't demonize marijuana, but at the same time doesn't make it illegal. You've been making some great points on the radio here. One of the concerns that I have is, you know, you talk about comparisons with alcohol. There's actually three times more people arrested for alcohol than for marijuana.
Right, for drunk driving and for excessive.
For what they do,
but they do
abuse.
Right.
Not for the use, for what they do under the influence.
Exactly. But you take a look at, there's probably six times more people who use alcohol than marijuana. So there's something to be said for the fact that keeping marijuana illegal will keep the rates down and hopefully will lead to not seeing the same number of arrests for marijuana that we see for alcohol.
Yeah, I have to jump in here because we're really running out of time. And I do will say that this is an issue I think that clearly from the number of calls and emails and tweets people really want to wrestle with in the state mm-hmm. on many different sides.
Mark, the legislators have to go to the legislature.
Yeah, that's why I was letting you all go do that now. So, Delegates Morhaime, Vitale, and Aurora, thank you three for joining us. I look forward to getting you back on very soon.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you all very much. And Major Neil Franklin, always great to have you in the studio.
Mark, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. We'll come back to this in pretty intense ways during this legislative session. And thank you all for being part of this program as well. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. You're a shooting star, I see. A vision.